You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Brian Kelly, Dan Nathan, and Guy Dami. Tonight on Fast, Microsoft higher in the after-hour session. The company reporting earnings moments ago. We'll bring you all the latest headlines, tell you what the street is saying right now. Plus, Bitcoin back in the saddle, the crypto holding steady above 7,000 after a massive breakout earlier this week. But BitMEX CEO Arthur Hayes, or as we like to call him, Mr. GQ of crypto, says the bottom isn't in just yet. He'll be here. But first, we start off with the comments from President Trump that shocked Wall Street today. Let's get straight to Eamon Javers at the White House for the latest. Hi, Eamon.
Yeah, Melissa, that's right. You don't often hear the presidents of the United States airing unvarnished opinions about the Fed and what it ought to do. But nonetheless, that's what we had from President Trump today in his interview with Joe Kernan here at the White House. Here's what the president said earlier this afternoon.
I put a very good man in the Fed. I don't necessarily agree with it because he's raising interest rates. I'm not saying that I agree with it, and I don't necessarily agree with it. I must tell you, I don't. I'm not thrilled because, you know, we go up, and every time you go up, they want to raise rates again. And I don't really, I am not happy about it. But at the same time, I'm letting them do what they feel is best. But I don't like all of this work that goes into doing what we're doing. You look at the euro, you look at what's going on with the EU, and they're not doing what we're doing, and we already have somewhat of a disadvantage, although I'm turning that into an advantage. You know, last year, and for years, we've been losing $150 billion with the EU nations, with the European Union. And they're making money easy, and their currency is falling. And China, their currency is dropping like a rock, and our currency is going up. And I have to tell you, it puts us at a disadvantage. Now, I'm just saying the same thing that I would have said as a private citizen. So somebody would say, oh, maybe you shouldn't say that as a president. I couldn't care less what they say, because my views haven't changed. I don't like all of this work that we're putting into the economy, and then I see rates going up. I see China where they're, I mean, look at what's happening with their currency. It's dropping like a rock.
So those comments got enormous reaction around the world of finance. A lot of critics suggesting there that the president was sort of treading on the independence of the Fed in the minutes and hour after those comments were released here on CNBC today. The White House put out an additional statement after that explaining, no, the president respects the independence of the Fed. They said what the president was doing here today, the White House clarified after that interview was released, was simply restating, as he said in the clip, restating his previously held views. And of course, this is not the first time that Donald Trump has criticized the Fed or the Fed chairperson. You remember back Janet Yellen back in 2016 during the campaign, the president was very, very critical of her, suggesting that she should be ashamed of herself for keeping interest rates so low in order to help Barack Obama during a presidential year sell his story on the economy. So this is not a man in Donald Trump, whether a candidate Trump or a President Trump, who's been shy about airing his views about the Fed. It's not something that we've seen other presidents do recently, but it's also not something that this president has shied away from at all. We'll see the full tape of that full interview tomorrow on Squawk Box at 6 a.m., guys.
All right, Eamon, thank you. Eamon Javers at the White House for us. Let's get a check on the market reaction to those comments, because initially we did see a market reaction. The Dow and the S&P 500 in the red today, the Dow dropping more than 130 points, closing near the lows of the session. The reaction was really seen in the U.S. dollar. It got crushed this afternoon before recovering some of those losses. So question here, we know about the trade war, of course. We're about to see a Trump-led war on the Fed. If we do, what could that mean for the market, Guy?
I don't think we're going to see a Trump-led war on the Fed. I think what we're in is a new paradigm. I think the president was pretty clear, and I'm not an apologist for the president if I criticize him when criticism is due, but I think what he basically said, listen, I'd be saying the same thing if I were a private citizen. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. If I were president, this is what I would have said. Rising rates are a function of a stronger economy that's being taken place after the things we put in place in my administration. It's something we have to deal with. I'm not thrilled about it, but that's the cost of doing business. Other countries are not following suit. And in the short term, we may suffer. But in the long term, it'll benefit the citizens of the United States and our economy. That's how I would have handled it. But I'm not president of the United States.
Short term, are we at a disadvantage by having a stronger dollar, higher rates than the rest of the world, which is still basically super easy
money? Not if the stronger dollar and the higher rates are because our economy is doing well. If those things are happening because of other reasons, like people don't believe in our debt that we're going to pay it back and rates are rising, then that's a problem. But let's put this in context. I don't think this is necessarily a war with the Fed more than it is an opening salvo or a response, actually, in a currency war. Because last evening, China did not defend the yuan peg that they have been defending. So this morning, you wake up to people in the currency markets asking, has China weaponized yuan? I'm not saying they have, but that's the beginning of it. Trump comes out today and says, you know what, we don't like a strong dollar. To me, this looks like the beginning of a currency war.
Yeah, so isn't that the main point when you think about the disparity? This is what Trump seems to be so focused on, this trade deficit that we have with China. And we know that they don't have to, you know, they can be targeted about what they apply tariffs to, and they could let that yuan go lower, right? And that's exactly what happened in 2015. And we saw the volatility across risk assets all over the planet when they did that. And if you look at the weakness right now, it could be setting up in a very similar manner, because this is a massive tool that they have in this trade situation.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you were talking about it as well, but he's speaking as an independent citizen, as president of the United States, when he was speaking with Joe. It's just an interesting thing for all of us to watch, and I think it's odd like the rest of us. But I do think, because of the fact that it's a strong economy that we've got right now, and I think that's something that has to be taken in, and everybody has to look at that and just determine whether or not we think that the Fed is doing the right thing. Right or wrong, are they doing the right thing as we go forward? How many more hikes do we see the rest of this year? And I think that's sort of where he's maybe trying to temper it down in his own way.
Why should he be tempering it down? When you look at the data that we have, you look at the economic growth, you said this is, we need to normalize, right? If you think in the last two market cycles, when we topped out, Fed funds were at 6%.
Right.
You know, so look where we are now. I think we should go with the guys who understand how to run economies rather than the guys who bankrupted five companies. And I want to take one other point. And this is a really important point. He's saying when he was talking as a regular citizen, Eamon Javers, the interview that he's talking about, when he said that Janet Yellen should be ashamed, he was saying because interest rates should be going higher. So he's saying the exact opposite.
We're on the campaign
trail. It makes no sense, though.
Well, it's just, but also economically, if everything that the White House has put in place, and there's been some very positive things that have happened, if our economy cannot handle a little bit of an interest rate increase, because to Dan's point, we are still extraordinarily low relative to history. If we can't handle that, then everything they put in place doesn't work.
Let's say...
I like when you play games.
Well, I mean, I think the question here is would the president's words actually influence the Fed? And I think we spoke to a lot of Fed watchers this afternoon who seemed to dismiss that idea. At the same time, from a market participant's perspective, the next time the Fed moves, let's say for some reason or other, let's say the Fed is concerned about emerging markets and the impacts of tariffs, and so they don't raise as quickly, will we then look at that action through the prism
100%.
Of...
100%. You'll come.
Said.
You'll absolutely come back to that Joe Kernan interview. We'll play
right.
the
we'll
sod
play
sound
and we'll
on
say,
tape.
Was the Fed
and we'll
politicized?
Was the Fed politicized?
Exactly.
Unequivocally, without 100%.
So is that a bad thing for the market?
What this also does for him, though, is in my opinion, whether he thought of this or not, I'm not suggesting either way. But if the market were to sell off, those comments give him air cover to say, you see what happened? Fed raised rates. Our economy was doing so beautifully.
They went too fast.
Went too fast. So it gives, and we talked about this when he talked about the market being a report card for his administration. Mm-hmm. What excuse could they use if the market went down? In my opinion now, this gives them a natural excuse if, in fact, the market does go lower.
All right. For more on this, let's bring in CNBC's senior economics reporter, Steve Liesman. Steve, what do you think? Any influence at the Fed?
I don't think so, but I wish I had a videotape. I could roll back and play what Brian Kelly just said. And I think he may have hit the nail on the head here, which is this idea that the trade war has now morphed into something of a mm-hmm. Fed war here. And I think, Melissa, you also spoke about this, and I hadn't really considered that. Other than the fact that I do know that the thing the president mentioned here, which is the Chinese yuan is weakening, apparently in response to these tariffs that are out there. So what do you have? You have step number one, which is you have the tariffs. You have the retaliatory tariffs. You have the yuan weakening, you have the dollar strengthening, and so now the president has to come back and has to kind of, I don't know what the right word is, bully or otherwise cajole the Federal Reserve to say, you know what, we need you to stop raising these rates so far because we're getting killed on the yuan. So this, I think what we have here is potentially, and I'm just speculating right now, is another fallout from the trade war now coming into potentially influencing Fed policy. Now, and I just want to, I'll just add real quickly, Melissa, that I think the Fed has to consider this, and I don't know how much they have to consider it, but the idea that the dollar may strengthen, which could have a negative impact on the economy because of the trade war, does indeed become a Fed policy issue. So hats off to all you guys. I think you got an interesting take out there.
And it's a major problem for the markets. We heard that yesterday at Delivering Alpha. Mary Erdos had mentioned that the dollar, the Dixie, is a one-year high right now, the yuan at a one-year low. I mean, this could come into play when it comes to earnings season as well, right?
100%. And Mary and Steve, you know, Steve was there as well. Mary Erdos' comments were fascinating to me. The one thing, J.P. Morgan, the biggest thing there, one of the fears that keeps them up, I'm paraphrasing, was the moves that they're seeing in currencies. Unprecedented moves that typically happen over months now happen over days. And I don't think that's in large part due, in my opinion, to central banks. I mean, Steve can chime in, but I think the central banks globally have inserted themselves way too much into the conversation.
Hey, Steve, well, BK. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm just not sure that's right, because I think that what the Fed is doing right now is the Fed is on a program that's been really pretty much pre-announced more than a year and a half ago. And I've gotten some tweets from folks who said, look, the Fed is playing politics, raising rates under Trump and not under Yellen. Well, of course, it's Trump's guy and also the vice chairman who are out there raising rates according to a prior plan that pretty much seems to have agreement, not only in the markets, which don't seem all that affected by it, but also, by the way, in Congress. If you notice yesterday, the last 2 days, not much pushback on Powell for the Fed's rate hikes.
Hey, Steve, I'm curious. You talk to central bankers all day long, and typically their response is, well, the dollar or the currency is the Treasury's concern. But when you talk to these bankers, how much do they really worry about a rising dollar and the impact that their policies are having on that?
Right. So, Brian, you're saying I talk to central bankers all day long means there are now people lined up for my job, as you might imagine. Well, here's the thing. Here's the line on the dollar and the currency, which is that they don't worry about the currency until it ends up affecting the macroeconomic outlook. And that's sort of an operative comment, which kind of works in the sense that if the dollar should fall sharply, fall abruptly, or requires or create some sort of change in the outlook for their dual mandate of employment or inflation, that's when they'd get involved. I will say this. Alan Greenspan said to me several years ago, he said this publicly as well, he goes, there's no outlook or there's no factor that can forecast the direction of the currency that's better than the flip of a coin. So I don't know that that's something that they can often take into account as to, you know, where the dollar's going to go. So it's very difficult for them to use that in their forecast. I think they're much less concerned with it than I believe guys in the markets think they are.
All right. Steve, thank you.
Pleasure.
Steve Liesman, chief economics reporter. All right. So
here's one certainty. Market participants don't like uncertainty. So yesterday, Larry Kudlow, the president's national economic advisor, or whatever he is, said that he favors a strong dollar. He's a king dollar guy, and he thinks Jay Powell's doing a great job. So today, we have basically the exact opposite from the president. This is the sort of messaging that I just think makes no sense, and it doesn't lend, you know, itself to a lot of confidence
to
about how
fair,
this is
to be fair, the president did not say anything about the dollar specifically.
Of course he did.
He did.
He was
say
talking
that
about the
Jay Powell was his guy and would let him do whatever he decides to do because he was a good guy. That's what the president said. I don't know if it's a direct opposite. I understand how you see there could be differences in the message.
He's saying that he's doing what he's doing not just because he's a good guy, but because that's what he's supposed to do. Nobody lets you do anything as the Federal Reserve chairman.
That's a good
point. The president shouldn't let you do that. President hired him to do the job, supposed to be independent.
Is this uncertainty in the market?
Well, there's always uncertainty. There's never certainty
additional
in the market.
Additional uncertainty.
And Dan would agree with
additional
that as well.
Additional uncertainty.
No, but yes, because the fact that we're now talking about, we have mentioned the Chinese dollar's been going down steadily over the last month and a half. August 2015, as Dan mentioned, China devalued the yuan. By February, the S&P was trading down to 1810. You can go back and look. Now, will they weaponize their currency again to fight this trade war? I have no idea. But if you're looking for an exogenous risk, to me, that's it.
You know, Steve mentioned whether or not the president was bullying the Fed or not. I would say no, because I think what we've seen out of the Fed over the years, and including with Mr. Powell, they have the mandate, they go with it, and they're giving you the facts. And a lot of people don't always like that, but that's how they've been going when they've decided to raise rates. When they made those moves, they've done it based upon a strict criteria, and that's what I think they'll do again.
All right, still ahead. Microsoft, higher in the after-hour session, the company conference call kicking off. In just about 15 minutes' time, we'll bring you all the headlines, have instant analysis from top technician Chris Varone. Plus, Bitcoin going bonkers this week, soaring through 7,000, but hodler beware. BitMEX CEO Arthur Hayes says the bottom might not be in just yet. He'll be here later this hour. We are live at the Nasdaq Market Site in New York City's Times Square. Much more Fast Money on this very busy night.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out shares of Microsoft higher in the after-hours session after better-than-expected earnings, although slightly slowing cloud growth. The tech giant has been on a big run this year, surging more than 20%, sitting near all-time highs, up 1% right now. Pete, what do you think?
You know, the focus has been on the cloud, and you said slowing, and that I think, is why we're seeing this move that's not exactly a violent move to the upside. I think as people digest it, just like they did last quarter. Last quarter, they released their numbers. Suddenly, the stock was down a few percent, and then by the time they actually gave their guidance, stock started moving higher, and by the time we opened the next day, I think we were up 4% or something like that. Azure has slowed down. It was 93%, now it's 89% growth. That's still pretty incredible. And I think what they're doing is eating away at AWS. So as that continues to go, and that growth rate is much faster than Amazon right now, I think that's going to be something very, very beneficial. I think investors are going to see that, and I think they're going to like this stock.
If I gave you all the metrics that we know about Microsoft and what they reported, slowing growth in the cloud, what would you say the stock reaction would be?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to put it in context. What Pete's saying is they did $7 billion in their commercial cloud, and it grew at 53% year over year. So that's fantastic, right? It's almost 25% of their total sales. And I think it really is about expectations. The fact that, to your point, the fact that the stock is basically unchanged, the implied move in the options market, about 3.5% either way, that's pretty good. It shows you that there's buyers, and they're pretty happy about a run rate of $40 billion in commercial cloud.
And this is at a stock, sorry to interrupt, a stock that's very close to its highs.
All-time right. high.
Yes.
All-time
absolutely.
High. Yeah. Beast.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they've done a great job in that. I'm not concerned over slowing growth when you're talking numbers like 50, 80, 90%. That doesn't concern me. I don't think it's going to concern the market one bit. You know, I want to see, as we go through this, what that GitHub acquisition is going to do for them.
58% margins in the cloud business, which means now their operating margins for the entire company is now at 34.5%, which is better than the street was looking for. If you're looking for a reason to sell or knock Microsoft, I'm not suggesting it should be. The one thing would be valuation. Now trading at 28 times. Does that valuation, is it justified by their growth rate? Now, if cloud continues to grow, my sense is yes, and the stock continues to grind higher. But if there's one fly in the ointment, I guess it would be valuation. Well,
that's really important. I just say on a P/E to growth basis in fiscal 2018, which just completed, this was a mid 25 P/E growing at mid 25 earnings growth. If you look at 2019 estimates, we're getting to mid to high single digits earnings and sales growth. So you put a mid 25 ish P/E on it, it is expensive all of a sudden. So you might, at 105, have much of the growth priced into this thing, in my opinion.
All right. Well, Microsoft's conference call is about to start in just a few moments, and we will be monitoring that call. But in the meantime, let's get a check on the technicals. Chris Varone, a Strategica's research partner, is standing by at the Plasma. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Melissa. How are you? And frankly, when we look at the response to the stock after hours, really fantastic. They tried to sell this. 102, boom, right back. To 105. That's how we want to see names and uptrends respond. And when we look at the longer-term Microsoft picture, there's no other word here to describe it than an uptrend. Every single time that it checks its trend line, it responds. It did it a few weeks ago. It responded here again. We think that 100 level is great support. Ultimately, you stay long. Two more names that I think in that context are worth highlighting here. This is Apple, biggest stock in the world. for a stock that gets a lot of bad rap here, it's still a big outperformer this year, up 13%. And when we look at the price action this year, great reversal off the January lows, retested, held the lows, and now holding the 50-day average. We think that 190, 191 level is good support. Ultimately, 210 is your target here. And then Alphabet, another name that held up to really interesting news this week, already making new relative highs. And when we take a look back at the chart over the last several years, every single time it consolidates, it resolves higher. It's doing it right now. We think ultimately that means Alphabet up. Microsoft good, Apple good, own this one too.
Come on over, Chris. Michelle will bring the chair in.
What happened to the days when you would say, hey, guys and gals?
Long gone. Yeah. Those days are long gone. Ancient history.
It's an automatic with Chris.
It's an automatic.
Yeah, well, it should be
for the people.
Do the Qs look as good as those three charts?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, when we look at tech broadly, 80% of the sector is still in an uptrend right here. Now, that number was 90% a year ago, so is it quite as broad as it was 12 months ago? No. But is it narrowing? Not really. I think when you look at this group, it's not just the big ones. Look at the payment processors. Look at PayPal. Look at Square today, right? There's a lot of names in this group that still act really well. It's hard for us to get bearish when that's the backdrop.
The S&P, we talked about this a number of times. Tested the lows three or four times. Now we're here with 2,800. Is it a foregone conclusion that we test those highs we made in January, whatever it was, 2,885 or so?
I think you're going to see the highs here probably sooner than later. And the one idea I kind of reject is that this market has narrowed dramatically. I know that's been a popular topic recently. If you reverse weight the S&P right now, it's still up about 5% year to date. So cap-weighted S&P up 5, reverse weight S&P up 5. That doesn't sound like a market that's narrowed dramatically to us.
How about those stats to say, like, the biggest four stocks account for 84% of the gains in the S&P 500 for the first 6 months of the year?
What that doesn't tell you is that that's true almost every year, especially in a year where the S&P is not up that much. It's very easy
but Chris,
for the big stocks to contribute.
And I get that narrative. Yeah. I mean, it's simple to debunk, but I don't think we've ever had four or five stocks that all have $800 billion market caps. And so if you ever had them all going in the same direction, isn't that sort of the risk? Because right now we have a situation where, yeah, Netflix is much smaller. It was down 15% the other day for a quick, but it didn't really shake too much. You know what I'm saying? So isn't that the risk, is that that if they all were to go in the same direction?
That's a great point. But what I think is notable, or maybe let's say it would be a greater risk if they were the only four or five names working in the entire market. And that's just not true. I mean, talk about some sectors that haven't been involved that are starting to show up recently. Biotech's been dead money for 3 years. It's back on the tape here a little bit. Banks have been dead money for 5 or 6 months. They've started to show up here a little bit. So if it was just those four or five names working, I think you have a great point. But I still think we have time before this gets too narrow.
All right, Chris, great to see you. Thank you. Chris Varone of Strategus. So
there
are sectors showing up to the tape now, as Chris says. Banks and biotech, would you rather?
I'd rather banks at this environment. I'm not worried about the yield curve flattening. I think the banks have good support here. That's where I'd rather be.
Pete, you're in both.
Is it banks or biotech? Is that what it was?
Yes, sorry. Yes.
Because you kind of jumped the shark on me. I didn't hear the whole thing. Oh, I'm actually good. As much as I love the banks, I'd actually lean right now towards biotech because I think there's incredible upside right now.
Yeah.
You know, I know that everyone's really high on the banks now. They had, like, a good week, you know. They're still, like, down 8% from their highs. You know, they just don't act well. I mean, I know that they had a bounce. They just don't act well, and I don't know what it is. But they have not shown up, in my opinion.
It's interesting we talk about leadership. And I like to bring sports analogies. I know you do as well. The Red Sox are playing 700 baseball. There are 25 guys on that team. But all 25 guys aren't ripping the cover off the ball. They're being led by a handful or seven or eight guys. Doesn't mean that they're not a great team. Stock market's the same. So I did that.
Oh,
that
was good.
It's not a bad analogy. Brilliant.
I don't know. It's all right. All right. Still ahead. It's okay. It's all right. We'll have much more on Microsoft later this hour. The conference call is kicking off in just a few minutes. We'll hear from the CEO. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC. First in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
When you wish upon a star.
Ah, to be a Disney shareholder, enjoying the longest winning streak in 5 years. And one trader sees even more gains to come. We'll explain. Plus, Bitcoin is surging. But could it all be one short squeeze? The CEO of a top crypto exchange, Arthur Hayes, will weigh in when Fast Money returns.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Giddy up. Bitcoin getting back in the saddle this week. The cryptocurrency rallied 20% at its highest level in more than a month. Our Bob Pisani joins us live from the New York Stock Exchange with more. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Melissa. You know, it may not be roaring back to life exactly, but Bitcoin has been definitely picking its head up off the floor. Now, some reports are calling this a short squeeze, up four consecutive days from roughly $6,000 a couple weeks ago to about $7,400 today. Bitcoin searches on Google, we watched that, it's dropped dramatically in the past few months. Well, they're the highest levels in the past month. But cryptos tend to move on two things. Number one, they tend to move on regulatory news. And number two, any indication that more users might be coming online. In this case, this week's news is mostly about more potential users or traders of crypto. So on Tuesday, we noted MasterCard had published a document outlining how they may try to speed up crypto transactions by linking accounts holding both fiat currencies and cryptocurrencies. MasterCard thinking about getting involved in crypto? Huh, that's big news. And Bitcoin was up 9% that day, its best performance in 3 months. On Friday, we reported Coinbase was considering adding 5 new coins to its platform, which would join Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, and Litecoin on their platform. Now, these coins all jumped, and even Bitcoin was up 5% that day. Still, Bitcoin volume is only modestly higher, and then only in the last few days, and futures volumes really haven't changed too much, so don't get too excited yet. There's one other possible positive here, regulatory. On Tuesday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said the Fed was not thinking of creating a cryptocurrency. Sounds like a negative? Well, listen, the purists seem to be happy to hear this. At least that's what they're saying to me. They don't want government intervention or oversight. If the Fed wants to step into it and start getting into the crypto business, there is potential for much more regulation. In their minds, the purist minds, this would be a negative. So Powell saying no one could that this could be viewed as a mild positive for prices, I think is an interesting idea if you accept the fact that more regulation would be negative for cryptos. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Bob, thanks. Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange. Let's trade it. You know, when we were speaking to Barry Silbert on stage, he said, you know, the Powell remarks, the amazing thing is that crypto had no reaction.
No reaction.
That seemed
whatsoever.
Like the best scenario.
Without a doubt. And that's how it should work. That's what this asset class is designed to do. We talked about the political whims of the currency markets, the fiat currency markets. Well, here's a currency, an alternative currency that doesn't sway necessarily with the global political whims. So we've had a lot of positive news. I've been up at the Plasma talking about all these positive developments. Bob just laid a lot of them out. And, you know, I think we just got to the point where the sellers were done. The sellers were exhausted. And buyers came in. We popped higher. 6,800, big technical resistance. Mm-hmm. We busted through that, up 9%. Looks to me like we may have bottomed here in Bitcoin.
All right. Well, some traders out there are saying that it was all part of a short squeeze. Mm. Let's welcome back Arthur Hayes, the co-founder and CEO of BitMEX, the Bitcoin Mercantile Exchange, which is the largest crypto trading exchange by volume. We've just given you a nickname, Arthur. I hope you don't mind. Mr. GQ of crypto.
Mm.
Not a bad one, huh?
No, I like it.
All right. So let's get down to the short seller theory. There's a lot of Twitter tweets going back and forth about the heavy volume on BitMEX and how this could be a short squeeze. Are you seeing any evidence of that?
Well, during the pump from 6,800 to about 7,250 in that about 15 minutes, we liquidated about $230 million worth of short positions. But bear in mind that we're a futures market, so for every long, there's a short. So there's not an imbalance of shorts per se, but many people probably entered a position at around the same levels, which is why we probably got a little pop there.
Do you think that we've seen the worst for Bitcoin this year?
I don't actually think we've seen the worst. I think this is a very strong rally on, you know, good volume, and we definitely could see 8,000, 9,000, and maybe just shy of 10,000. We've been here before earlier in the spring. We rallied from about 5,800 to in the high 9,000 level, but didn't quite crack 10,000. I think similar action will happen this time, and I would like to see us test 5,000 to really see if we put a bottom in.
Do you think we'll see more volatility? I mean, that's really what traders want to see, right? And that's what's good for your business, volatility either up or down.
Absolutely. And given that it's the summer and everyone's in the Hamptons or the French Riviera or in Asia and Bali, I think people are taking a little bit of a chill time. Come back into Q3, Q4 is when I think the party's going to start again.
Hey, Arthur, it's BK. So you're talking about an awful lot of volume going through your exchanges. U.S. citizens can't trade on your exchange. So what's the character of the person who's trading on BitMEX, and are you seeing a change in that?
So we're primarily a North Asian platform. And as I've said many times, the penetration of internet, the penetration of mobile makes it a fertile ground for digital currencies. And you also have a great culture of gaming where I live. So that's why we've seen the majority of our customers come from that region. And in general, if you look at the largest exchanges in the world by trading volume, they all are in North Asia.
Everybody's at the Hamptons or on their yachts. I thought this was a different kind of crowd, Arthur.
Fantastic.
Decentralized, you know, power to the people kind of crowd. Power to the people doesn't exist on yachts. I guess it does.
Well, I guess it depends on who can get on the yacht.
I guess that's true. In terms of volumes, though, where are we? I mean, relative to the peak volumes that you probably saw back in December, where are we in terms of getting that volume back?
So for BitMEX, at least, we've actually expanded our share of the market in 2018, and we actually had our best month in March. But definitely for the spot exchanges that don't have any leverage, the peak volumes were in December. And I think we've seen them pick back up slightly. We'll definitely see volumes increase if we continue this rally. But as I said, I think through the third and fourth quarter has generally been a very positive time for Bitcoin because everyone's come back from their summer vacation.
All right, Arthur, we're going to leave it there. Great to speak with you.
Thanks for having me.
Arthur Hayes, otherwise known as Mr. GQ of crypto, or at least henceforth known as that.
Henceforth, I like that. That's like Fortnite.
That's like a guy kind of word.
Henceforth.
Yeah, I like old timey.
Oh, yeah, it's old timey.
I think his commentary is pretty interesting. You know, when he thinks, when you ask the question, has it bottomed? He says, well, no, I think that maybe there's a test of the 5,000. When you look at that Q1 rally after that huge decline, it had 100% rally. And then it came back in and made a new low. And then in the Q2 rally, it was 50%. So here we are, really quietly up 25%. Almost 30% in Bitcoin, and it's a kind of interesting point. If it doesn't hold, it's going to make a new low, and it's probably going back to that 5,000 level, round-tripping the whole move from last October.
Hey, I got a quick question for you, BK.
Yeah,
because Barry Silbert was sitting there next to us yesterday, and I thought the most intriguing thing, and I know that was nice of you to retweet what he said. Yesterday, he pointed out that 50% is in Bitcoin, and then he's got it spread across multiple other currencies. Mm-hmm. So how do you view how you invest in this whole crypto world that the rest of us still are trying to put our arms around?
So I think that I look at it and say there's probably going to be a half dozen to a dozen coins that actually are the foundational protocols of this ecosystem. So let's say Bitcoin's your currency, perhaps Ethereum's your smart contract platform, maybe we'll have a governance platform, but we'll have a bunch of different currencies interacting with each other as foundation to Web 3.0, which I know you guys have talked about a lot.
All right. Still ahead, Microsoft is up about 1% in the after-hours session. The company's conference call just kicking off. We'll bring you all the Wall Street reaction here from the CEO in just a few minutes. Plus, Comcast, our parent company, dropping its bid for Fox, sending Disney on a magic rally today. Shares doing something they haven't done in 5 years. We'll tell you what that's all about when Fast Money returns.
Sing it, Pete.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Disney proving that anything can happen when you wish upon the right star or succeed in buying the bulk of Rupert Murdoch media empire. Stock rallying 6% in the last month, now up for 9 straight days. Its longest winning streak in 5 years. So is the magic back for the Mouse House? Guy.
But Nancy, she's the director, and she's cracking up because Pete and I are singing.
I know.
Jiminy Cricket.
Jiminy Cricket.
I'm upset.
Makes no difference where you are.
There you go.
Back to the trade.
Coincidence or not, Mel, when they legalized sports gambling, if you recall, was
I do.
Disney was trading either side of $100. We had a conversation on the desk. This might be the catalyst. This might be what saves ESPN. We got bullish on Disney. 15% later, here we are. Is there room to the upside still? I believe so, especially as we get into earnings season. So I think they've staved off the death knell that they appeared to be in. And I think this gambling thing was a huge. Now, I know we can talk about Comcast and Fox. We can talk all. I don't think that's got anything to do with it. I think it's all in the back of the
I think
gambling.
That has a little something
little,
to do with it. I think you're right, though. I mean, we talked about it that day when we talked about this could
I don't know if it necessarily saves ESPN, but it certainly is a great lifeline for ESPN and actually maybe extends forward. But the idea of what they're going to get from this deal, I think, and I don't know that they even had to overpay as much as everybody's got an opinion on that whole thing. They get Star from India. They get that big chunk of Hulu. Those are assets that I think will really mesh well with what Disney's trying to do.
Anybody have thoughts on how Comcast traded today? Got an upgrade today. It dropped its bid. Not going to engage in a bidding war. And the stock is back to April levels.
Yep. You know, I actually, if you're Comcast, you have to compete for these assets, right, and drive up the price as much as you can from your key competitor. And then now they go back and they are focused on this international expansion, which was really what they had already decided to do months and months and months ago. So to me, I think Comcast is good in shape, but I think they did everything that they should have, and they did not overpay for
this
asset.
But are they going to overpay for the assets that everybody says they're going to look for next, Sky? Are they going to overpay or no?
I don't know. I don't work for Comcast.
Well,
they've shown discipline so far.
They don't have to compete against themselves on this. I mean, they certainly played a great game of chess here. So stock reacted, I think, fairly well the way it should have today. I still go back to, I think all of these people should be looking into the e-gaming or the e-sports, if you will.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the growth area for the entire media sector.
Well, you know, options traders are betting Disney's magical rally is about to run out of steam. So, Dan, what'd you see?
Well, not exactly. Listen, you know, on a day like today where this stock almost got back to its 52-week high, it might have done intraday above 115, call volume was really hot. It was three times that of puts, and total options volume was three times average daily volume. The most active strike that I saw was the September 120 calls. A little more than 8,000 of those traded for an average price of about 140. It looked to be selling. It looked like someone had this position in place. You get this pop above 115 to new highs, and they're taking some profits here. That doesn't mean that the run is over, but it's had a really nice run over the last couple months. The company's going to report on August 7th, I believe. I think the options market between now and then is implying about a 5% move in either direction, which seems kind of fair. That is that 1 year chart right there. There's obviously some resistance up there at the prior highs. We have a 5 year chart, which this is the most important one to me for probably technicians. I'm a bit of a novice here, but look at that thing. It just broke out above that downtrend that had been in place since those highs. I think it was about 122 back in 2015, Guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing is if you go back and you look at the last week and a half or so in Disney, even wherever the stock has been, it's obviously been running higher and higher, but they have been very aggressively positioning for a move to the upside. And it was the 111 strikes, and now they went all the way out to October like a week ago, the 115. So people are expecting the stock to go higher. Now, is 120 the cap? Maybe. But there's been very, very aggressive buying in between the levels, between 110 all the way up to
120 is interesting because it's right near that prior all-time high, which will be significant resistance.
Yep.
All right. For more options action, check out the full show. That's tomorrow, Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, Microsoft shares up about 1% after hours. The conference call is going on right now. We will get the reaction from the street. Plus, let's get a check on our Cramer cam. There's Jim. He's sitting down with the new Domino's CEO. This after the stock burned investors today. We'll give you a sneak peek at that interview in just a few minutes. Much more fast right after this.
There's some noise going on in the industry, you know, but we're really focused on our customers and our franchisees. And I think if we can continue to deliver great value, great food to our customers, and can continue to support great cash-on-cash returns with our franchisees, I think we can continue to gain market share, and we're fairly agnostic as to where that comes from.
That was Domino's Pizza CEO sitting down with our Jim Cramer moments ago discussing the company's focus on value and quality, and this after some disappointing earnings this morning that sent shares down around 2% today. Now, despite today's move, Domino's stock is still on fire. Shares are up 15% in the past 3 months, along with names like Shake Shack, Chipotle, and Dunkin'. So given the rally in some of these names, we thought this would be the perfect time. Perfect time for a brand new game we're unveiling tonight, and it's called Order Up or 86. Got it? Order Up or 86. Here's how it works. Very simple.
What could go
wrong? Domino's is the example. If a trader here thinks it will go higher, they will say, order up. And they'll see this. If they think it's going lower, they'll say, 86 it.
86 it.
See? Red hamburger. Wow. Make sense?
Voiceover now.
All right. Okay.
But why is it a hamburger? It's a pizza joint.
Maybe it's a hot dog.
Because we're talking on all sorts of fast food.
Yeah, it's diner talk, Guy. Come on.
Okay. All right. Let's start with Guy. Order up or 86 on Domino's.
Batter up, Mel. That's what I say. Order up, I mean. Whatever it is that I means, I'm still
I'm still bullish. Listen, the knock on Domino's is going to be, it's trading close to 30 times forward earnings. And the knock on this quarter is not EPS or revenue. The knock is domestic comps. That's what people are focused on. Is growth slowing down? Maybe. But as Steve Grasso has pointed out, this is now a technology company. I have faith in this new management team. And I think despite the valuation, the stock probably could have been a lot down a lot more today given the tape. I think it's going higher from here, so batter up.
Yeah, I don't like how it traded at all. I would avoid the noid in Domino's, absolutely. Growth is slowing, and you've got a high PE. It's not a place I want to be.
I don't like the sound effects.
No, the 86 thing is something.
I don't know. Let's go to our next one. Our next one. It's Pete's turn here. Chipotle, what do you say?
You know, obviously, since they brought in the new CEO, this stock has absolutely taken off. It's up 56% year to date. I mean, it's an unbelievable run. So when I look at this company and what he's been able to do and what he wants to implement, the stock's already in front of itself. I think it's priced in. So for that reason, I'm 86ing it because I think when I look at the valuation at 67 times, it's just, and I look at Domino's, whether it's 30 or 40 or whatever, and McDonald's about 25. I mean, this is just extremely fast to the upside. I think there's a pullback coming.
Order up or 86 it, Dan?
Listen, Chipotle. I think it's had a good run. I think the easy money's been made. And yeah. I think at this point, when you think about how do they get back to their peak EPS, which is they're probably on that trajectory, you know, it's going to take a little time here. So I'm going to 76 that thing.
Yeah, 76.
How about you, Beaks?
Deep six that thing. I agree with both what these guys
said.
Deep
six, 86, 76.
You guys are so annoying. Okay, Shake Shack is up next. Dan, order up for 86.
I think he is. 76 hit or whatever we do.
76
hit. Let me tell you why. Okay? I think this is an amazing product. I think it's an amazing growth story. I think when you think about this company is growing sales at 30% a year right now, expected to be $450 million. I think McDonald's does that like in a week or something like that. So I think they have this amazing opportunity, but the stock's up 60% year to date here. I think you want to digest the next quarter's earnings. Maybe you get a better entry point because I do like the growth story here.
You got two 86 at Red Burgers.
That's a shock.
You know what? That's my order at Shake Shack. I do two singles.
286
is the whole thing. Yeah, I do two singles because I like the whole, you know, thing.
Josh Brown calls that an appetizer, by the way. I hope he's watching.
TRB, and he loves that.
That's a takedown. That's an 86.
I order up that takedown. All right, last up, Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin'. BK, what do you think? Order up 86.
Oh, that's an order up flow, without a doubt. I mean, for a kid who grew up in Boston, he's got a special place in his heart for Dunkin'. Place is wicked good.
Pete?
I would agree. Huh. That's an order up.
Yeah, that's an order up and giddy up. This thing's going higher.
Oh, you guys finally got the gist of the game.
There's room for expansion on the giddy up.
You know, it's really not fair for me to play this game because I actually worked at, as you know, I worked at the Domino's and I worked at the Shake Shack. So it's somewhat, it's disingenuous of me.
Were you fired? Were you 86?
Oh, yeah. No, look at that.
He was 86, for sure.
He was 86.
Yeah,
I wasn't 86
anything. He needs a red burger on that VO.
See, I got the whole thing going there.
Coming up.
Wash your hands.
Microsoft higher in the after-hour session. The company conference call is underway. We will tell you what Wall Street's saying about the quarter. Much more fast in two. Microsoft's earnings call wrapping up right now. Let's get to Josh Lipton in San Francisco. Hi, Josh.
Well, Mel, for a quick take, I checked in with Kirk Matern over at Evercore ISI. And speaking about that commercial cloud revenue number of $7 billion, up 53%, Matern saying when you see that kind of strong growth off a much bigger base with stronger leverage, it reiterates the positive thesis around the cloud story. I did ask him about Azure. You know, that growth clocked in at 89%. It was 93% in Q3. So why that deceleration? Matern saying he simply believes that's the law of large numbers kicking in. The base is getting bigger. He says this is probably a $9 billion business growing at more than 80%. And I also did check in with Ken Accord's Richard Davis. Now, he tells me he was a bit cautious heading into this print just because the run the stock has had, reminding us that it was up more than 20% year to date heading into the print. However, he remains bulled up on that name, thinks it's a tech stock you have to own. On the call, Satya Nadella talking more about Azure specifically. Take a listen.
The world's leading companies are running on Azure, and I'm especially proud that Walmart chose Azure and Microsoft 365 to accelerate its digital transformation for their associates and customers.
Nadella, spoken about Office 365 there, knowing that's a multi-billion dollar business, says Windows 10 is now active on 700 million devices, says LinkedIn has 575 million members now, revenue growth there of 37%. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Josh, thanks. Great rundown of the quarter there. Microsoft shares up basically at after-hour session highs right now. Dan, what'd you make of the commentary?
I think Kirk Matern had it correct. You know what I mean? This is a good story here. You know, the valuation, as we mentioned, I think is kind of challenging here. But I think when you're talking about their core growth initiatives and the way they're growing and what the greater percentage of their total sales, I think it makes sense here.
Anybody?
What I really liked is we actually finally got a report about LinkedIn and the fact that the growth there, and 37%, I mean, that's a huge number. The one thing we really haven't looked into that's another aside of all of this is the gaming side, which is something, you know, we mentioned with Disney, but when you look at the Microsoft side, it's another part of the Microsoft that everybody just sort of casts off. They've had growth there as well. Last quarter was 18%, so I think going forward, they've got growth, growth, growth. Obviously,
you're in
cloud's
the stock
driving.
And the options here.
I am. Yep.
Yeah. What do you need the options to do to make money?
Well, I own the 110 calls, and with a move like this, you don't have to go through 110 for those to actually move. They're already going to start moving come tomorrow, so I'm excited about that.
All right. Up next, final trades. Trade, Pete.
I'm going with Weight Watchers. First of all, we had option activity in there today. Second of all, Oprah is the greatest activist investor I've ever seen, and I think this stock's going higher in there. No longer just a diet company. This is a lifestyle. Giddy up.
BK.
Interesting. Well, you know what you should buy in a currency war? You should buy some gold, GLD. If you don't like the Bitcoin, gold's your place to go.
Nathan.
Retail had a good day today. One of the most constructive charts in retail is Target. That one looks like it's going to make a play for its prior all-time highs here, 85.
Bring it on, Pagan.
Yeah, 86.
That pulls up. Great music tonight. You hear that Lee Van Cleef stuff we had going? Do-do-do-do-do.
No.
Know what else is good?
What?
And not bad or ugly anymore? IBM.
All right. I'm Melissa Lee. Thanks for watching. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money starts right now.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.